the decisions made in the first month can be your make or break.
I'm MK Anderson, and this is First 100 Days. A podcast where we discuss the idea that if the first 100 days of a presidency are so important, they're likely to be important for anybody else's career and life moves. We'll talk to CEOs, first-time parents, startup bros, and more to discover if the first 100 days are really that important. Today, we're chatting with Julie Stouch, who is the Iowa political director for Pete Buttigieg's successful Iowa caucus win. She's an Iowan through and through, working on many campaigns. For example, she was President Bill Clinton's Iowa press secretary, managed three congressional races, and owns her own executive coaching firm. I am so excited to chat with her about the first 100 days of political director in Iowa for former presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg. Well, how are you today? Thank you so much again for chatting with us.
Hi, MK. I'm great. It's great to be here, and I'm excited to talk with you.
Well, thank you so much. And especially since, you know, with the 2020 elections coming up, I'm sure so many people are fascinated to know what it actually looks like to be in a campaign. Would you mind explaining to us what it means to be the political director? What sorts of responsibilities do you hold?
Well, the political director on a presidential campaign in a state can be a couple different things. For me, on Pete's campaign, my role was really to lead a team of people to secure endorsements, because of course, endorsements help influence other people, and they're like, oh, you know, if my friend Mary endorses, then that influences me in a good way. That's what we worked on, but also on a lot of them, you work on scheduling in advance, and because they're all sort of related to how people have high-profile contact with Pete.
And in terms of endorsements, we recently chatted with a local campaign manager who was doing a city council campaign in Seattle. And one of their big priorities was just knocking on doors and getting volunteers. And would that be something similar to getting endorsements, or was it on a corporate level or higher level than that?
So getting endorsements is typically it's getting somebody who's a high profile person, an elected office holder. It could be somebody who's prominent in the community for, you know, their good works, or, you know, it could also be people who are influential inside the Democratic Party, you know, and or the Republican Party would have the same sort of thing. It just depends upon your candidate, because you want to look for an intersection between your candidate and what your candidate stands for and the interests of these, high profile people. Sometimes they're a business owner. Sometimes they're like a scout leader. It doesn't necessarily have to be, it can be somebody who's a volunteer leader and they can still be highly influential.
What was your relationship with the national campaign versus the Iowa campaign?
Great question. We had a national political director and a team of people at the national level who worked under him that were specialized in different areas and different, you know, sort of categories of people, if you will. That's also relatively typical. And my responsibility was just Iowans.
So as political director of Iowa, what were some of the benchmarks that you were looking for specifically that might have been different from the national campaign at the beginning of your time?
Right. Essentially, you know, my first 100 days thing, right? What was on my list for my first 100 days?
Is that exactly?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Number one was to fill out the staff team, because this is all about people contacting people. And frankly, that's what any campaign is about, people contacting people. It was real important that we had people who were Iowans or who had some significant Iowa experience. In part, that was because the with so many campaigns in the state this year, you know, bear in mind, we had 24 candidates for up until about the last week, we had 24 candidates. And so when you have that many campaigns and that many staffs, very few of them have Iowa experience or are Iowans, and our campaign, that was true. So it was really important that our political team have that Iowa connection. And so that made finding people harder and getting them on board. But that was one of the things that was on my list. Another thing that was on the list was really getting an understanding of what I knew what moved me to support Pete, but we needed to understand what was moving large groups of people. And so getting a feel for that very early on in order to then make sure that we were emphasizing the things that helped the campaign. You know, running a campaign is sort of like being a member of a family. You are you. Your role is important. And, you know, what your uniqueness is important. But the fact of the matter is you're a member of that family and you're a part of that family and you, you know, you pretty much can't escape it. And so we had to be collaborative. We wanted to be collaborative. It's not a had to, it was a want to be collaborative with the organizing team. We wanted to be collaborative with the people out in the field. We wanted to be collaborative with, you know, every single aspect of the campaign because that only made everybody stronger.
How would you get a feel for what the local folks wanted and were drawn to Pete? Was it through polling? Was it through just knocking on doors and asking them? What was the strategy you all had for that?
Well, for the political department, we pretty much had target lists of elected officials, county chairs, all kinds of people with leadership. People that we knew who were influential. So we just literally, combination, worked the phones and went and met with people in person. That's basically what we did. Organizing was where you saw more of at the doors and all, but they actually used a different model. They used a great model. It's called the relational model, and it was incredibly effective and powerful. So
what is the relational model?
The relational model, to explain the relational model, let me quickly explain sort of how it typically gets done. There's a voter file. You are given a piece of turf, you know, a specific geographic space, whether it's a couple blocks or a precinct, you know, and then you work that area to identify supporters, and you do that by phoning, by canvassing, by texting. That's how you make those connections. Well, in this case, the relational model, instead of working with the voter file, you're asked to use your own phone and contact your own network and identify five people who you think you could have a conversation with about it. Get comfortable with having that conversation with them. So that model was far more effective because people answer the phone when they know the person, and B, they listen because they know the person. And, you know, how many times do you get a call that you thought it was somebody else, you'd answer it, and it's like somebody, and they're pitching you on something, and we're all turned off by that because it happens too much. So we've got to go to a different way of doing it. And this is a wonderful way to do it. It's a very, very natural human way to do it.
And you've been involved in so many different Iowa campaigns and just politics in general. So what was different about Pete's presidential campaign compared to other campaigns that you've worked on? It seems like the relational model is one example of that. What else was there?
The relational model, Pete was so different from most of the candidates. He is so different. He's very, first of all, he engages with people and answers their questions. When they ask him a question, he answers them. And he answers them without cliches and without, canned phrases. Now, obviously, when he's delivering a stump speech, it's a stump speech. So you do get some of that. But, you know, we did Q&A at our town halls almost all the way to the end because it was so effective, because that was where he really answered people's questions. And even when he could tell that they probably weren't going to like the answer, he answered them. And, you know, what that does is that really cultivates a tremendous amount of respect, because when you're willing to be honest with the person, even if they're not going to agree with you, at least they recognize you're being honest with them and they appreciate that. And the fact of the matter is, there's nobody who's going to be president who's going to be able to answer every question in a way that any of us would like every answer. It's not going to happen. I mean, Pete was a big part of the factor. We had a fabulous team of people. Our organizing team, I mean, all of our team was very strong, organizing political operations. It was just a great team. But I would say our organizing team, the way they trained their people and the way they did they really brought out so much in people and really invested a lot in the people doing the work. Whether it was the precinct captains or the, it just doesn't really matter. We made sure people understood what they were walking into, knew how to do it. And I saw just a tremendous amount of making sure people had the confidence to succeed. And consequently, we succeeded.
What do you think it is that ultimately led to your success? Do you think it was Pete's genuine nature and his ability to speak to people? Or do you think that there was just a lot of good strategy behind the campaign?
It's kind of like trying to sort out which came first, you know. I think his nature attracted people. And then we had an organizing system that welcomed them and folded them in. Our rules of the road were very impactful with people. And I don't know if you're familiar with those, but respect, belonging, truth, teamwork, boldness, responsibility, substance, discipline, excellence, joy. And then they had explanations of what all of those meant. And anybody involved with the campaign had to agree to follow those rules. And it was fabulous. It's been a long time since I've had a candidate say, these are the rules we expect you to follow. And it makes a difference for the people doing the work to know that. But I think that it was a very belonging community. People were welcome. Republicans were welcome. Former Trump supporters were welcome. People who want a different option this next year found a place in our campaign. And we essentially did not turn anyone away, although I would say most of the other campaigns would tell you they didn't turn anyone away either. But a lot of times campaigns don't realize what turns people off. And this campaign was very cognizant of what might turn people off and instead focused on what makes them feel comfortable and included and empowered. I think empowerment is ultimately the most important thing.
You also had to have had a strategic approach to it all, because while his charisma is awesome, they hired you because you have great strategy and a great brain.
The strategies, yes. We went everywhere. We went to many, many smaller communities multiple times. We targeted counties that had been Obama previously, then were Trump counties in 2016. And we went in and we made sure they were Buttigieg counties, and they were. I think that, you know, that was a big strategy that then, you know, we drilled it down to the tactical level and we implemented it at the tactical level. And so really our goal with the change in the rules of the caucus, and I will not go down that rabbit hole, but with the changes in the rules, we modified how we would approach the campaign based on some of those changes. And I really think that that contributed to our success. But I mean, at the core, our people were so amazing. And when I was at events with Pete, people would be coming up to him all the time saying, "Oh my God, your people are amazing." Everywhere we went, they would talk about that. So it was really, they were, you know, we had a great team of people, and it matters who you have on your team.
Who was in charge of coming up with that strategy? I would think almost to defer to you because you know Iowa the best. So was it you who came up with the idea of let's go everywhere versus let's only hit the high population density areas?
There were several people who were looking at it and who came to that conclusion. We came at it from different directions. So for example, our organizing director had been reading the book on Obama's campaign. I think it might've been Dave Plouffe's book. And how they made the decision of where they were gonna go. And so I know he was advocating for a change there. I came in because I'm an Iowan and because I'm will classify myself as a rules geek. I came in through the rules point of it. The rules have changed a lot. What are the implications of those rule changes? And how do those rule changes create new opportunity for us? And what should we be thinking about doing differently? And so I was able to be a part of some discussions about that. And so it was a combination that came from different directions.
And does that look like a situation room sort of thing with one big conference room table and you all have a whiteboard and you just throw ideas out there? Or what does the collaboration process look like?
Well, that is always different based upon every single campaign I've been on. It's never the same thing because it's so collaboration is so personality driven. And, you know, your leadership has to decide how they want to do it. In this case, for example, the time we had the discussion about making the change and how to make the change and all that, was that one took place in South Bend. And there were five or six of us from Iowa who were there and participating, you know, our digital director and you know, several different people who had weighty responsibilities and impact. And I was there for that. And in that case, it started off where we discussed our state director shared his point of view. Then I shared my point of view. A discussion ensued. The organizing director, we quickly moved because the organizing director knew where he wanted us to be some time ago. And so we quickly moved to a different approach. And then from that point on, it pivoted to where we had a facilitator who was brought in to facilitate the conversation. And she really took over and directed what are the steps for organizing? How do we do this? How do we do that? And that, and really broke down all the pieces of it. Because largely the impact was a change, in part a change for organizing, and in part it was a change for how Pete was scheduled in the state and where.
Do you think that his first days and the first days that you all were actively campaigning in Iowa were the most important, or do you think it was just a conglomerate of all the days and his character and the strategy that you all had?
Well, every single day was important. And certainly every single day Pete was in the state was important. He's the kind of candidate that when he was in the state, our organizing team, you know, they were tracking who signed up as a supporter and who signed a commit to caucus card and who was willing, you know, they had all these different contacts that they were making that then they would do follow-up contacts with those individuals. And the numbers always spiked wherever he was. It would just be like, you know, you see like little plumes going up. And if it was a digital chart, you know, there'd be a plume here and then a plume there. And it was always where Pete had been. You know, it matters for people to understand the candidates, the various candidates. And then when they make an endorsement, then the specific candidate. But it also matters who is on the ground and who is talking with him and with the Iowans and how they're talking with them and how they're engaging them. So, I mean, like, it's a very tightly woven strategy tactic, you know. From the outside, it looks seamless, you know, and we only subdivide it all. I mean, like, look, our organizing team, our operations team were amazing. The materials they put together, the meetings that were put together, all the sort of work that they set up was amazing.
Hey, would you mind doing me the biggest favor in writing a review? See, if you like this episode, the only way we can continue to get really amazing guests and talk about really amazing, awesome, cool, insightful things is if more people listen to it and more people learn about it. And that can be done by just telling a friend or writing a review on Apple Podcasts. I promise it costs you nothing and we really appreciate it. All right, back to the episode. You have done a really good job of saying that the team really does make up a lot of the campaign, and without a good team, you know, a lot can be lost, and it's a team effort to really do that. But at the same time, there still is the candidate, right? Pete is still the face of the campaign, and you've done a lot of executive coaching. Would you mind explaining what that is and how important you think it is for campaigns?
Executive coaching has been around for probably 40 years. And I stumbled onto it after working with this woman, with a candidate for the U.S. House in Pennsylvania, a brilliant woman, sort of one of those people that everybody likes, or, you know, like just this outstanding candidate on every level. And she, we would have these moments because she was so smart. We would have these moments when she would ask for an explanation on something that to me was so basic. And I realized, you know, yes, she's brilliant. Yes, she's smart, but she's out of her context. And the trainings and work that was being done for campaigns, for candidates, were always in groups, always with organizations that where you were also going to be, you know, trying to get a donation from them for your campaign. So in that setting, when they talk about something and you don't understand it, who's going to raise their hand and ask a question? Not many people will, because you risk looking like you don't know what you're doing, and you risk then not getting the contribution to do the work. And so I created an executive coaching program for candidates. I will tell you, I didn't coach Pete. He did not need me. So, I mean, he needed me, but not in that capacity.
Right.
But I created this program to work with candidates, that basically to give them a confidential conversation and an overview of what it's like to be a candidate in order to be able to be successful in making their decisions. Because so many campaigns, the decisions made in the first month can be your make or break. And because it's about who you hire and, you know, and so you have to think through these things. But anyway, back to the point of executive coaching, in the campaign itself, they actually, in the organizing side, applied coaching similarly, slightly different. They basically were coaching the organizers and coaching and training other people to be coaches so that they help. That was part of the relational model, an important part. And it really built a strong team and the sense of community, and that really helped there. So coaching is a wonderful thing. And executive coaching is for people in leadership positions to be able to not only improve themselves personally to be able to grow and thrive in their work, but also to be able to improve the organization that they're working with, and to be able to bring 100% of who they are to the work, rather than, you know, maybe 60% of who they are.
And can you expand a little bit more on the idea that that first month can really make or break a campaign, especially when it comes to coaching? Like, what would be an example of coaching gone wrong, I guess, or just someone without coaching and it potentially harming a campaign?
The thing that I've seen the most, that happens the most, is they rush out, they decide they're going to get in, a candidate decides they're going to run, they get in, they rush out, and they make a series of decisions on, you know, spending money, how they spend their time, who they hire. I think that the irony to me is that a lot of people assume because they've been successful in their career, they can now pivot, run for office, and they're going to be successful running for office. And it's a whole different world. It's like you're peeling, it's the Matrix, you know? You can't see it, but it's there. It's this different world, and you need to be prepared going into it before you actually run and throw your hat in the ring, so that you've laid the groundwork that's going to help you have the most opportunity for success. So some of the decisions that people make that are problematic are, they hire particularly consultants based on a criteria that has nothing to do with actually what you're going to use the consultant for. And that's the most common one that I've seen. And they'll go out and they'll hire all those people right away. And then they're not getting the fit for them or for their district that they need. And in the kind of coaching that I do, I really focus on the candidate, who they are, the year, you know, what the year is like, and what are the implications, you know, like this year, COVID, huge year, different year. And then the district itself, because the district determines sort of, lays out fences, you know, this is your space and you have to work within this space. You want to customize to make all your variables fit what you're trying to do. It's like any good recipe, you know, which I know it sounds like I'm trivializing it, but I'm not. You know, you have to get the right amount of all the different things so that it isn't too salty or isn't too sweet or doesn't have too much. You know, my sister once baked a pie and she doubled the Crisco and didn't double everything else. And so it was disgusting, you know? I mean, like, you got to pay attention to those ratios.
So then would you say that first impressions really are important when it comes to campaigns?
Every impression is important when it comes to campaigns, but certainly first impressions. Yes, you can absolutely. And I think in a year like we just went through, leading up to the caucuses, first impressions were critical, because if you had a poor first impression, there were so many candidates, you didn't get a second chance. And because the field was so crowded, you really needed to have a very clear sense of why you were doing this, what you were trying to achieve. And it didn't have to be a finalized path on how you were going to achieve it, but there had to be a path. And I think a lot of people got in without a path. And at the level they were at, it's not hard. Like a U.S. senator, former governor, former member of Congress, you know, mayor of large cities, you know, all of those qualifications gave each of those individuals a sense that I know what I'm doing in this world. I know how to go forward. But, you know, running for president in particular is a whole different ball game. It's just a whole different, it, you know, it's kind of like It's like, okay, I'm going to use my recipe metaphor. You've got this favorite family recipe that you make for your family, and it's so good, and everybody always loves it, and they rave. Now you have to make that recipe for 150 people. The ingredients will be the same. The outcome, you hope, will be the same. But the way you make it will not be the same because your volume just increased so incredibly. And it's planning for that volume. Because to running a U.S. Senate race, yeah, you have to deal with a couple million people at least, you know. In some states, it's 15 million people. But, you know, you have to deal with a lot of people when you're running for the U.S. Senate. But it's nothing like what you have to do when you run for president.
I can't even imagine, honestly. It seems like a extreme roller coaster, especially for the people working on it as well. Just because you guys are not the ones actually on camera every single time, it still just seems very daunting. And so I'd like to congratulate you all for doing such an excellent job when it comes to the Iowa caucus.
Well, on behalf of the entire Pete team, I accept that compliment. But it was a team effort. So, you know, that's...
You're too kind, but you're the leader of them all. So I'll give you all the credit. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today. If you had any lasting words for anyone who wanted to get started in campaigns and politics, what would you say?
It's actually quite easy to get started working on a campaign. Start off by volunteering and get in and volunteer, pick a candidate or a cause you care about. Use your voice, use your friends and family and your connections to advocate for something you believe in. They will trust you because they believe in you. And so you take that. It's a tremendously empowering experience. And I love our democracy. And that is not an exaggeration. It is the right way for people to work together. Is it perfectly implemented? No. But And in some circumstances, like some of what we're dealing with right now, it's incredibly imperfectly implemented. But overall, the process is as good as what we put into it. And so put your best into it. Put your best into it and you'll get good out of it.
That's such a wonderful response. I really appreciate that. Thanks for listening to this episode of First 100 Days. Original music by Dan Chmielinski, and feel free to tell your friends. Bye, y'all.